Hello, welcome to My Camino, the podcast. I'm Dan Mullins, and it's great to have your company. This is a podcast about the Camino de Santiago, a series of pilgrimages across Europe. Pilgrims walk for a range of reasons. Some walk for redemption, others walk to pray, some to sing, some to write a book, some to escape the pressures of their day job. Actually, come to think of it, the one thing you don't hear very often on the Camino is, what do you do for a living? Because it doesn't matter if you're a doctor, a nurse, a cobbler, or a farmer. You're welcome to your journey, your pilgrimage, however you come. It's your Camino. And I spoke last week about taking the time to ring the bells somewhere near Zubiri. And as always, my listeners are my best researchers. It was, in fact, at Zambaldica. And I'm grateful for my friend and former podcast guest, Tom Labaczynski, for sending me a picture of him ringing that bell. It's between Zubiri and Pamplona. I'm most grateful for Tom's scholarship. And I'm determined to get back there to ring the bell myself one of these days. Actually, ringing a bell is a very neat metaphor for what we're talking about this week. It's a phrase that describes something that causes someone to remember something, something that jogs one's memory. And people write to me all the time to say the podcast takes them back to the Camino. They say they can relive their experience. They can each week allow their consciousness to return to the Camino de Santiago, that place many call our spiritual home. And there's been a lot of talk here in Australia, and indeed around the world, about values lately. I'm no scholar, but I know the values I was taught as a child were based on the values of Christianity. We were raised to believe in Christ's teachings. And I've said here many times, Christ's message was about love. And it's love that motivates many pilgrims, a love they perhaps didn't even know they possessed. They might take someone's pack for them and carry it for miles. They might give up the last bed at the albergue to a pilgrim limping into the town square. And it always has fascinated me, this pilgrim courtesy, because we wouldn't necessarily be quite so generous at home. But many of us take that message home with us. It's why people say your Camino begins once you arrive in Santiago. It's the hills you climb at home that will challenge you, the steep descents, the rocky path, the stumbling, tripping, falling over yourself. And it's the devotion to others, that essence of Christ's love, that will make the climb easier, the road and descent smoother, and life a pilgrimage to enjoy. I think in many respects we are responsible for a lot of the pressure we place on ourselves. We are the ones placing unreasonable burdens and expectations on ourselves. We are the ones who let what we do for a living define us when it oughtn't. Forget about what we do for a living. Focus instead on what we do for a life. Being a son, a daughter, a mother, a father, a grandfather, grandmother, a carer, a sharer, a pilgrim. I'm fascinated by the Camino family and how it wraps the globe in its hands. And I'm fascinated by what pilgrims are able to achieve. I remember walking past pilgrims thinking, they won't last another day. Then I'd see them later, sometimes weeks later, walking strong, pushing on. I saw couples walking together. I saw pilgrims become couples. I saw mothers walking with sons, mothers walking with daughters, fathers walking with sons, and fathers walking with daughters. I don't have a daughter, but I do have a granddaughter, but no daughter. But I remember years ago, I saw a framed sign in one of my old girlfriend's rooms. It said, "Fathers, be your daughter's first love and she'll never settle for anything less." I was intimidated to say the least. Well, my guest this week is an Irish pilgrim who walked the Camino with her father, and they went on to write a book about it. Natasha Murtagh is on the line from Ireland. Welcome, pilgrim.
Hello, thank you very much for having me from one pilgrim to another.
Yeah, before we get to the Camino, my first glimpse of you and your social media suggested you were in Guatemala. What was an Irish pilgrim doing in Central America?
Well, I suppose when I graduated from university here in Ireland, I always wanted to go traveling. And what I thought was going to be 6 months ended up being 4 years trotting around the world. And it started in Africa and it ended with 2 years in Guatemala, because Guatemala was a country that had everything for me, from the sea to the mountains to the jungle to volcanoes. And that is exactly what I ended up being, a volcano tour guide in Guatemala.
A volcano tour guide in Guatemala.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite the business card.
Yeah, it is. And even now, you know, I'm home back in Ireland, I think 3 years. And even now saying it, it still makes me kind of go, what the hell is that about? But it was, I guess, my love for hiking and, you know, adventure landed me in that job. And it really was. Yeah, I'd never been to Guatemala ever. And I had no intentions of staying there. I didn't know anything about Guatemala, to be honest. I was making my way up to Mexico to catch a flight back to Ireland, because I'd been gone for quite a while and, you know, money was scarce. And a flight back to Ireland from Mexico was the cheapest because it was the shortest distance. So I gave myself 2 months to get from Colombia all the way up to Mexico to make that flight. And I never left Guatemala.
How fantastic. That's so great. I know that spirit of adventure, and we're going to talk about it throughout the course of the podcast. I said earlier, you walked with your father, Peter. So let's go back, cast our minds back. Whose idea was this pilgrimage, this Camino?
It was my father's idea. I'll actually never forget the day that he asked me if I would like to join him. He had been on a motorbiking trip around Spain with his friend Tony. I can't remember what the trip was about. It involved motorbikes and wine in Spain.
And that's enough sense. Leave it there.
Yeah, leave it there. No more needed. And he was driving through the Spanish countryside and he kept seeing, you know, people with backpacks walking through fields and stuff. And he asked what it was all about. And the locals said, "That's the Camino de Santiago de Compostela. They're pilgrims." And this is going back way back. And he was interested. And he always will tell you his first Camino was on motorbike because he would wiggle in and out of the Camino. But obviously, as we know, that's not what a real pilgrim is. You can't be on a motorbike. But anyway, he came back to Ireland and I was, I had just turned 16 and I was sitting in the playroom here in my family home, watching TV, and I was in a grumpy mood and I'd been in school and my mum probably said something like, "Oh, Natasha's in a bad mood" or something. And dad came into me in the playroom and he said, "Would you like to go on a walk?" And I looked at him, I was probably watching, you know, MTV or some stupid program, you know, and I was like, "No, I don't want to go on a walk." And he said, "Oh, well, it's in Spain." And I was like, "Oh yeah, sure. When? What's that?" And he sort of hooked me into this thing, and that was kind of it, you know. That was it.
How fantastic! So, how long between that conversation in the TV room at home and stepping onto the Camino? What was the timeline? How long did it take you to actually get up and get on the Camino?
Probably 4 months.
Okay, so did you do lots of preparation? I mean, did you get swept up in it all or did Dad do it all?
Oh, Dad did absolutely everything for me. I wasn't going to lift a finger for nobody. He did everything. That was the first time around now. This is when I was 16. So he did everything. I literally just showed up, kind of thing. You know, we flew out to, we got to Santander, and then we got the train, and we started our first Camino. We started in León and walked to Santiago de Compostela. So I think we were walking for about, it was either 5 days, I think it was maybe 5 or 7 days. It was a short one,
yeah.
But it was enough for my father and I to be hooked for the rest of our life.
You know, the book starts with you and your father traveling to County Mayo, and I've been to County Mayo. And you walked, I suppose, in the footsteps of St. Patrick in some ways. Indeed, there are relics, and you talk about it in the book, relics found in Mayo tracing back to those days. And some say St. Patrick brought Christianity to Ireland, and we've been drinking a toast to him every March since. And the Camino is walked in the name of St. James. So how well known is the Camino in Ireland?
I suppose it has changed drastically in a short amount of time. When my father and I first did it, when I was 16, back in 2008, I think it was, or seven, no, maybe six. I never heard of it.
Yeah,
I really had never heard of it, and it wasn't really that popular of a thing. But in the past, I'd say 10 years, it's really become quite popular. I think that movie by Emilio Estevez was a big one for putting it on the marker. But it's strange how it wasn't more known, because it connects two things that are very, very much loved here in Ireland, and that is religion and hiking. But I would say it is very well known now, and there are Camino walking groups all over Ireland, like little clubs, and there's lots of websites, and you know, it is spoken about. But I, you know, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have said it was well known. You know, my dad is a journalist, and he's been a journalist for, you know, over 30 years, and he didn't know about it, if you want me to put it like that.
There you go. Yeah, I'm going to get to your dad and his journey as well. But we talked about County Mayo there. And why did you, I guess, start your pilgrimage there? Like, you knew about the Camino. Why did you want that Irish element to kickstart it?
Because technically speaking, it is the beginning of the Camino. Now, I would have to go and revert back to my book for this, because I'm not so good with the history of it all. But me and my mum and dad and my brother have been going down there for years, every summer. A huge, huge, huge love for the place. But there you have the mountain Croagh-Patrick, which is, you know, a fairly famous mountain in regards to Ireland. Not that that would take much, because we're such a small country, but you know, it's high, and it's got a great hike up it, and people do it. You know, you have Reek Sunday, and it must be Easter. So it's around St. Patrick's Day or Easter or something like that, and you hike up to the top of Croagh-Patrick, and at the top of Croagh-Patrick there is a little church. And, you know, over the years, it's become this really sort of symbolic, religious, you know, pilgrimage type thing. And I know I'm not going to get this right, but there's something to do with St. James of the Camino of Santiago. There's a correlation there. And my dad, when we did the Camino, the full Camino from start to finish, he didn't want to just start at the start, Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Paul. He wanted to start as the sun was rising on the top of Croagh-Patrick, as the sun was rising over in Santiago de Compostela. And we hiked Croagh-Patrick at, I think, you know, some stupid o'clock. It was like 4 a.m. or earlier, so that when we reached the peak of the reek, the sun was rising, and we then descended and got straight on a plane and flew and began our Camino.
So you're saying Crowpatch, is that C-R-O-A-G-H?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, and then you'll say we climbed to the top of the reek. Is that R-E-E-K? Is that like the that's not a word I'm familiar with, reek.
Oh, it's like, so you have a mountain and there is, you know, like a saddle or a shoulder where the mountain will go down and then up again, right. And the reek is sort of what you walk along and climb.
Oh, there you go. So then you made your way then after seeing the sun come up in County Mayo, and you made your way to France and Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port to begin the Camino Francés. The book then tells the story. Can you remember, what did you expect to feel or find on the Camino, on that journey?
I can tell you what I didn't expect to find. That's probably easier.
Yeah.
I didn't expect to find this world of vulnerable humans, where all of our walls and barriers are immediately taken down purely by the fact that you are both pilgrims and we are both walking here together. And, you know, I found that everyday walking was like another sort of therapy session, you know. Everyone was just so open to one another and, as I said, you know, vulnerable and in some way or another healing. And so the enormous emotional side was what I was not expecting. I think what I was expecting was, you know, to hang out with my dad, who I get on with very well, and meet a few people, walk, which I've always loved. I love walking, you know, and drink wine along the way. But it was just the emotional side of it. Still, like, you know, as I'm thinking about it and talking to you about it right now, I can feel myself choking up a little bit. It's just this power that I can't. It's very, very hard to describe to somebody that doesn't know anything about the Camino, but it is quite remarkable, the strength of that pilgrimage on your emotional self.
Well, so what expectation did you have of your relationship with your father on the Camino?
I don't know if I had any sort of I guess I hadn't really thought about my relationship with my dad until we started walking the Camino together. You know, we have the same humor. We'll always make each other laugh, and I don't know. Like, I've always got on with my father really, really, really well. But I suppose, you know, somebody asked my dad while we were walking the Camino, you know, why are you walking the Camino with your daughter? And he said something along the lines of, because I know what it is going to give her. I know what this experience will mean to her when she's older. And I think that's it, you know. The moments that my dad and I had on that Camino, you know, on all the Caminos that we've had, are second to none. And I think, you know, after the first time, I think I just said yes to every Camino, because I knew that it was going to be yet more amazing, priceless memories for my father and I, and, you know, strengthening our already very strong relationship, I guess.
How many Caminos have you walked together?
Together, we've done 6.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, or I think maybe I've done 6 altogether. Dad and I have done, yeah, it's 5 or 6, you know, different little Caminos, you know, whether it was, you know, 200 kilometers or the full whack, or whether it was the Portuguese Camino, or whether it was that, or, yeah, you know, we've done a few now.
The front cover of the book shows the pair of you walking, and you both just look so happy. You do, don't you? It's such a great picture. It's like, oh, wow, what a fantastic journey together. And together is a very important aspect of it, isn't it?
It is. It is very important. And I think a lot of people walk the Camino alone. And that's usually because they need to get away and find themselves and fix something that perhaps isn't going well in their life. But the people that do it with somebody else, who that person is very important, because it is a very, very, very special journey. And you don't want to do it with any, you know, Tom, Dick and Harry that's going to get on your nerves. So for me to do it with my dad was just particularly special. And, you know, Dad, when we did our first one when I was 16, Dad was 50-something, you know. And people along the way, whether they were, you know, newly engaged couple or whether they were, you know, two best pals, you know, we would be the more exciting couple to them, I suppose, in the albergues, because, you know, people would be like, oh my God, like, you're a 16-year-old girl. You're walking this with your 50-something-year-old dad. Like, we were an unlikely pair to find across the Camino. But I think we were one of the more special pairs, because it was very sweet, you know, that a father and daughter would do that. And I think, you know, for anybody listening to this podcast, any father or daughter or mother or son, to do it with your child is extremely special.
Yeah. Yeah. The book tells the stories of the people that you meet along the way. Would you agree with my assessment in the opener that pilgrims walk with love?
The pilgrims of the Camino are like a different breed of human, I think. whatever a pilgrim is walking for, there is some love in there. You know, whether they are running away from a disaster at home or being fired or losing a loved one or, you know, getting out of jail, whatever it is, if they're on the Camino, they are walking with some love, with some amount of love. There is love there. There is love in everything along the Camino. And I think, you know, when I was walking the Camino, one of the very common questions that we were asked and that I asked was, why are you walking the Camino? And the answers you would get back are, you know, they'll stay with you forever, and they are riddled with love.
Yeah, I found no matter how tired and exhausted I was, I could always rely on a cold beer with friendly faces from around the world at the end of the day. It's a kind of magic, isn't it?
It is, and I think in your intro you said Camino family, and that is, my dad and I, we would always mention the Camino family, and it's kind of what I was saying earlier, you know, you can find yourself being so open and so vulnerable and so willing to share with your fellow Camino family, because there's something that you share together with this stranger, and that is the fact that you are both pilgrims and you are both making this pilgrimage together for some reason or another. And I suppose when your fellow pilgrim is asking you, you know, why are you heartbroken and why did your marriage not end, it's easier to answer it there than it is back in your hometown when your mother-in-law is asking you or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's just this sort of instant bond between one another, and it is so special. That bond with your fellow pilgrims is quite unbelievable.
I remember sitting in Porto Marin, and a German girl came and sat down beside me, and she said, oh, can I sit beside you? And I said, sure. And she said, oh, you know, and she started to tell me this most extraordinary story of the hardship she was having at home. And she talked for like 10 minutes and then she finished and she said, oh God, I've been wanting to say that to somebody for years. I finally said it. And I didn't know what to say. I'm not no social worker. And I said, well, you know, I'm pleased to be your sounding board. And she said, oh my God, I've got it off my chest. I just wanted to say it. And I thought, how fantastic. In this town in the middle of Spain, I was tens of thousands of miles from home. She was certainly thousands of miles from home, but it was just so beautiful to think that she had or felt the courage just to say it to a stranger, which I thought was just so lovely. And just in terms of, did you and your dad walk together each day, or did you sometimes drift apart?
Oh, there's a funny story in there now. We started every day together. But we wouldn't necessarily end our walking day together, because usually, Ned, if Dad ever hears this, he'll be annoyed for me for saying this, but usually I would finish before him.
Right.
Just because I'm a speedy little thing, and obviously I'm younger, but Dad is a very good walker. But yeah, we would separate, and we'd sort of wiggle in and out of each other's daily pilgrimage, and we would chat to people along the way. But there would be like 4 hours where we'd be one beside each other, right beside each other. But we switched it up, you know, We didn't, you know, I didn't stop to pee when he stopped to pee, kind of thing. You know, we woke up each day and we said, right, let's go. And we would go to sleep each night having drank wine together. And I might have met people along the way that he didn't even see.
I think it's fantastic. I really do. I think it's just so beautiful. Now, there's a great passage in the book about running with the bulls.
Oh, God.
Why don't you tell us that story?
God, it's so funny. we have come to this place called Estrella.
Yeah.
And it is the running of the bulls capital of the world. You know, a lot of people think that it's... Well, actually, maybe I'm getting this wrong. A lot of people think of Pamplona when they think of running of the bulls. But I think this place, Estrella, is maybe the starting point, or, you know, there's something with the running of the bulls in this town. And Dad and I got there, you know, whatever. We usually stopped walking at about 2 o'clock each day because we got up so early. So we get to this place, you know, seemingly very small little village, check into albergue, you know, blah, 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 blah. The next morning, we go to leave, and it's like a different world. You know, the streets are all blocked off. Everybody's wearing white and have these little red scarves around their necks. And we're like, what the hell's going on? And Dad is he's a great man for adventure. And he's also, you know, very nosy, like myself, I suppose. And, you know, he just started asking, what's going on? What's going on? What's all this about? And they're like, oh, it's the running of the bulls. You know, the streets are blocked off and the bulls are going to run through here. And, you know, the men in the white shirts and the little red neck scarves are going to run. And Dad is like, oh my God, this is fantastic. And we didn't realize that we had walked into the beginning of this festival. What's it called? Like Santa Man or something.
Yeah.
And Dad was like, Tash, we have to stay for the running of these bulls. We cannot leave. And I was like, yeah, absolutely, grand, sure. So we pack up our bags and we find a little spot along the runway, I suppose you could call it. And we're standing there and we put our bags down, and Dad said, I'm gonna jump over the fence and I'm gonna run with the bulls. And I was like, Dad, are you joking me? He's like, no, I'm gonna leave my bag here, I'm gonna jump over the fence, and I'm gonna run with the bulls. And I was like, well, I'm sure as hell not waiting here alone, so let's go do it together. So the two of us hopped over the fence, and we were standing with a group of Northern Irish lads at the time, these three boys, Andrew, Gary, and Sugar, what's the other guy's name? Anyway, and, you know, Dad said, stay here with the bags. And the lads were like, okay, yep. Two of us hop over the fence. And, you know, there's this little, you know, girl and his father with a band of, you know, sexy, young, athletic-looking Spaniards. And they're all in white shirts and red scarves. And there's us in our hiking boots. And, like, all the people along the side of the fence, you know, they were shouting, like, no, chica, and all this kind of stuff. And before we could think any more, there goes the gunshot, and we look behind us, and there's this rumbling of bull feet coming around the bend, and then we saw them. And I think Dad's final words to me were, "Tash, if you fall, roll to the side. Don't let them trample on you." Yeah, and I think that was the moment when I thought, "Mum's going to kill me," or "Mum's going to kill Dad."
That is so great. That is such a great story. And then you ended up parading in a fiesta. What the?
And we were on the front cover of their national newspaper.
Yeah.
So we did the running of bulls, and it was so funny. Like, I don't know how far Dad got to, but I remember hearing the bulls getting closer and closer to me. And exactly as Dad said, like, I saw a doorway at some point, and I just went into the side of there and let the rush go by, because I was kind of like, this is a little bit scary. But I think Dad might have made it all the way to the courtyard or something. I'm not sure. But anyway, it was gas crack, and it was brilliant. And I think it was then afterwards, might have been before, I can't remember, because it's quite a while ago now, but there was some sort of parade or march or whatever. And we were just like, right, yeah, let's get involved here. And we just sort of invited ourselves into this march and, you know, put our hands on some sort of pole or whatever to look like we were contributing. And next thing I know, we're again in this sea of uniformed men. And there's us, like me with my Ray-Bans and Dad with his like silly little hat. And a photographer obviously saw that and thought, God, that's a really interesting image. And sure, there we were on the front of the newspaper.
That's fantastic. That is just such a great story. Honestly, the book is so beautiful. It's such a great read. And we'll get to the talk. We'll talk about that in a minute. But I should have asked you sooner. Are you and your dad religious people, Natasha?
That's a good question. No, we're not. I would say I'm reluctant to use the word atheist now, but I would say there is sort of like no religion there with me. And interestingly, with my dad, and I didn't know this until we did the Camino where we wrote the book, I think my dad did have a relationship with religion, and he lost it along the way, or perhaps with the death of his mother, which he sort of really struggled with. My granny was a very beautiful, pure kind of woman. I wish I knew her better, but I was quite young when she died. But, you know, she was very athletic and youthful, and she played tennis and did gymnastics and all this kind of stuff. And she died far too early. She was in her 70s, but she, you know, it was awful when she died. And she had this beautiful relationship with nature. And she would have been religious. And I think when she died, something changed in my dad. And I remember Dad saying, because I think I asked him when we were walking the Camino, I said, "Dad, are you religious?" And he said something along the lines of, "I'm jealous of people who believe in God, because I think it's quite beautiful to think of, you know, a greater good that is looking out for us." And I would agree with him there. I think that's quite a lovely concept. But he thinks his religion is, you know, in nature and in his connection with wildlife. And I would say the same thing. You know, I don't necessarily believe in praying to God or knowing that there's a, you know, a man up there looking out for us. But I certainly will find my religion, you know, when I'm watching, you know, an animal, you know, eating grass, or, you know, I'm standing at my back door right now here in Ireland, and the sort of day is just awakening and the birds are singing and, you know, the world is still sleeping and I'm standing here. That's kind of, you know, what my father and I would find our religion in, I suppose. It's that connection that you would have when the world is still asleep and the birds are up and you feel peace and that kind of thing. But it wouldn't be in a higher power like a god or whatever.
What did you make then of the churches that you wander into on the Camino?
Oh my God, the churches, like, Jesus Christ, my dad is just an absolute.
That was probably not like, the right answer, but go on.
my dad is an absolute fiend for a good church. Like, ever since we were young, every single bloody family holiday, when we were kids, like, we'd be going through a town and dad would be like, oh, look, there's a church. We'll just go in there. And me, my brother and my mum were like, for God's sake, this is the fifth church. Why do we have to go into every bloody church that we find? And of course, the Camino, he was like a pig and shit. He was like, oh, this is brilliant. There's churches all along the way. This is brilliant. And we'd be walking and I'd see a church on the horizon and I'd be like, oh, here we go. And before dad could even say it, I'd be like, yeah, we can go into that church. And he would go in and, you know, the smaller and more random the church, the better for him. You know, like, oh, why is this here? Yeah. Why is this church here? Who? And I'm standing there being like, who cares why it's here? Let's go, you know, kind of thing. And he's like, no, Natasha, you know, why is this here? And so when we wrote the book together, it worked quite well because he did, you know, the sort of historical, religious, you know, research background, whereas I was just like, we went walking today and there were lots of flowers, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was just obsessed with the churches. He loved it. He found, I would say, you know, dad would probably say he finds churches very romantic. And he loves the idea of them. Why are they there? And this and that. So he would probably answer that question better. Whereas I'm just like, I really don't know what I feel about churches. It's probably just this dying resentment from being dragged through a million churches from when I was younger.
Did you ever get lost?
You know we did. You read the book.
Exactly. Go on.
Yeah. So we definitely took a wrong turn at some point, but the one where we got lost or separated was my dad, as usual. I was ahead of my dad. And when we did the big long one, I didn't have a smartphone or an iPod. I didn't have any technology with me. And so we would rely on just guaranteeing that at the end of the day, we were going to end up in the same albergue or whatever. And I thought dad was ahead of me, but dad was behind me. So every town I got to, I would go to the main albergue and I'd be like, oh, you know, did a Peter Mirta check in? And they were like, no, no. So I would keep going. I kept walking. And it was when we were going through the Spanish desert, the Meseta. Mm. So it was like, you know, flat, hot, sort of unforgiving conditions. And long story short, I think it was, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the day, and I think somebody in this albergue said something like, your father's behind you and he's looking for you. And I immediately was like, oh, I'm in so much trouble. And a very, very sunburnt, very furious father eventually got to this albergue 47 kilometers later and was absolutely fuming with me. And so we were basically playing cat and mouse. Like, I was chasing him, or so I thought, and he was chasing me, but I just kept going and going and going. And yeah, that was definitely one of the times where dad was most furious with me ever. He was so angry. But there was another time where we took a wrong turning or something and we had to backtrack, but I can't really remember it. But that time when we got separated was pretty hilarious for me, not so much dad.
Tell me about the simplicity of a pilgrim's life, the couple of things in your backpack and not really having to worry about any of those material things that we worry about at home.
Yeah, well, I think my dad would be a great one to talk about this because he's a very, very, very simple man in the sense that he doesn't need much to live a happy life. And when I was packing, you know, I was like, oh, what should I bring? And dad was like, oh, all you need is just 2 pairs of socks, 2 underwear, 2 t-shirts and 2 shorts. We can wash everything every night. And I was like, oh, for God's sake, dad, like, we don't live in the bloody like 20s. I can bring a little bit more than that. And we always laughed. But, well, no, we didn't laugh at the time, but I brought like a towel and my dad was like, you don't need a towel. You just need a little bit of cloth to dry yourself after the shower. And I was like, don't be ridiculous. Like, well, I'm going to need a towel. And sure enough, along the Camino, I would wake up in the mornings and dad would have showered. And whose towel is lying there wet? It's mine. He was using my towel. And there I was thinking he was going to be this amazing frugal man with a little face cloth wiping his armpits. But no, he was just like, oh, she's still sleeping. I'll just use her towel and it'll be dry in 5 minutes. But, you know, we did bring very little. We brought very, very little. You know, like I said, I had no technology with me whatsoever, which was amazing. I brought, I think, a pair of flip-flops and shoes. And yet, we brought very, very little. And we didn't need anything more. Because as long as you have a good pair of shoes and, you know, a good bag, you really don't need any more. Because, as you said, Dan, the simplicity of the pilgrimage is what you must cherish the most, I suppose. It doesn't need any, it doesn't need a facelift. It doesn't need to change. I hope the Camino never changes, because it is that simplicity that you think, you know, in this ever-changing world where everything is moving more towards technology and we all want things quicker, faster and easier.
Yeah.
You know, life on the Camino is slow and it slows down, and there is, you don't need anything, because everything that you need is there. It's in the people, it's in your mind, it's in who you're walking it with, it's in, you know, the flowers along the way, and it, you know, it's in all this kind of stuff. When we, shortly after we had ran with the bulls in Estrella, we met this old man, and he was sort of like the hero of the village. He was really, really old, and he invited Dad and I up to his house, his little farmhouse, right after we'd run with the bulls. I guess we'd gotten word of mouth around the town that said there was these two Irish nutters that just ran with the bulls. So this this little hero wanted to bring us up to his farmhouse, and he would make walking sticks with gourds on them. And he couldn't speak English and we couldn't speak Spanish, so the whole interaction was completely silent. But there was a moment where Dad, it was when this man was showing me his gourds, and Dad turned away to look out over the valley because he was getting very emotional. And I think he says it in that book, you know, it was in that moment where Dad was watching this old man show me how he made these walking sticks and these gourds. And it was then that he realized that this Camino was showing me that, you know, Dundrum Shopping Centre and UGG boots and designer clothes meant absolutely nothing anymore to me. There was this beautiful interaction with this old man that was showing me a thing that was in his family and in his history for years and years, and I was fascinated with it. And it wiped out all of the other, you know, materialistic things that would have been high on my priority list as a kid growing up. And on the Camino, it just strips everything back and it brings you back to earth and realigns all of your values and makes you realize what's important and what's not. And it's certainly not money or spending money on things that will make you appear like you have your shit together more than others. You know, it doesn't matter, and nothing matters on the Camino other than you know, you and yourself and your connection with that walk.
Yeah. The book in many ways is about family and the bond between a loving, adventurous father and his daughter, who in many ways was ready to embrace the world. In the book, you're 19. What do you make of that quote that I said at the top of the interview? Fathers, be your daughter's first love and she'll never settle for anything less.
Yeah, I think that would that would be good in terms of me and Dad's relationship. I think he always said, you know, he always said that, oh, I didn't need a man. Sure, I was gonna marry him, like, you know, in a sort of way that Dad was always going to be, you know, the man in my life, so to speak. And I don't really know how to put it into words, but I guess, you know, my father is possibly one of the best people that I've ever really met in my life, in that I've always admired him in a sort of career-based You know, he's a journalist, and I always wanted to be a journalist, but in a way that, you know, Dad has always taught me the important things in life. What should matter and what should be of my focus. And, you know, he doesn't really get distracted by, you know, the bullshit of the world. And, you know, he would always encourage me to go on walks and, you know, educate myself and all this kind of stuff. And I suppose, yeah, my father has just really been someone that would always make me feel safe and comfortable. And yeah, I mean, any man that comes into my life, like, if Dad doesn't like them, they can get back on the boat, I suppose.
I was going to ask where your dad is now, because he's a celebrated writer and newspaper editor. And in many respects, I suppose, Natasha, it must have been daunting writing with him.
I think if I was asked now to write with Dad, I would feel the pressure more. But because I think I was 17 when we were writing it. I turned 18 when it was published, I think. So back then I was just very sort of in my own little world, and I was like, yeah, Dad's a journalist, but whatever, I can write too. You know, I was totally unaware of the sort of the pressure of comparison and all this kind of stuff. And I just remember, you know, at the end of the day, at the end of each day, because we wrote along the way, we bought this little MacBook thingy or notepad, and we would write every day. So it was great, because then by the time when we were finished, the book was essentially written. But at the end of each day, I would say, Dad, can you just read over what I wrote? And so he'd read it. And I don't think he ever said, oh, that's shit, because I think he wanted my side to be this sort of juvenile, young voice. He didn't want it to be a structured and edited thing like his possibly would have. Like, I think that's the beauty of the book.
It is indeed. That
Dad, yeah, it, you know, Dad is obviously a very good writer, and he had an idea of what he was going to say. He had an idea of what he wanted his narrative to be. Whereas quite literally at the end of each day, when it was my turn to write, I'd put the laptop in front of me and I'd just be like, okay, so at the beginning of the day, and then I just talk like my brain, you know, like,
you
in
do.
My head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think, you know, I didn't feel any pressure writing alongside Dad, because, you know, I didn't think about it. I didn't think about it, you know.
Yeah.
And now I think it wouldn't be as good now, because I would think about it, and I would realize, oh shit, Dad's, you know, very good writer. My spelling isn't the best, and I'd probably change my writing. Whereas, you know, in that book, it is so clearly what is in my head, like, and it's literally like a train of thought, and I think that's the beauty of it.
Well, it's interesting you just said that, because the next line that I've written here in my script is, it's beautifully written. there is a great sense of a father and a daughter, and of course there is this great experience in this, you know, somebody with a great experience in writing and somebody who is streaming consciousness in many respects, because that's what you were doing. That's what you were experiencing. And that's precisely what the book manages to capture, which is really beautiful. What about today, Natasha? Do you often reflect on the Camino together?
I would say it comes up a lot. It does.
Does it? Yeah.
And I think before I went traveling, like I was saying, that's how I ended up in Guatemala. I went traveling right after university for, you know, just shy of 4 years on my own. So that would kind of come up for me a little bit more now, because that was the biggest, you know, journey that I've ever done in my life, I guess. But before then, the Camino with Dad was definitely, you know, a huge focal point in both of our lives. And now, I suppose, since I've come home, you know, I think we're going to go off in September and do a different part of the Camino. But I think, to answer your question, it is a huge focal point in both of our lives. It's something that we have done together multiple times. And you know, it did something different for both of us. You know, I suppose I'll never really know what it did for my dad. It definitely was something that gave him peace with the death of his mother, or perhaps the death of his relationship with religion, or lack of relationship with religion. It gave him, you know, a stronger relationship with me and vice versa. But, you know, what it gave to me was a really, really, really good starting point for, I guess, figuring out what's important in my life and what's not. And for a 16-year-old to be given that by the Camino while she's with her father is something that I can never, ever, ever put a price tag on, because it's definitely helped sculpt the woman that I am today, I suppose. And I know that if I'm lucky enough to have children one day, I will 100% be walking the Camino with them.
Honestly, you speak so beautifully, and you articulate so perfectly what so many of us think. No, I really mean that. And I know you're a writer and a journalist. You're used to telling stories. That's what you do for a living. But you do tell those stories so beautifully, Natasha. So let me just take a step back from your relationship with your father and in a more wider sense talk about the Camino itself. What do you tell people when they ask about the Camino, your friends and people that you meet, perhaps colleagues who ask about the Camino? What do you tell them?
I think, you know, when somebody says, you know, why did you walk the Camino? Or why would you walk the Camino? I think a great place to start in explaining or talking about the Camino is, if you need to figure something out in your life, walk the Camino. If you are heartbroken, walk the Camino. If you are unemployed and you've lost your house and you don't know what to do, walk the Camino. If you're about to get married and you're unsure, walk the Camino. It is this thing that gives you time alone with yourself to figure everything out. I mean, it really is just this thing that fixes you or helps you fix yourself. It's like, and I didn't know that before I walked it, obviously. I just thought, like, oh, yeah, I'm going on a walk with Dad. Cool, yeah. Ooh, holiday in Spain. And I came back like this little Buddha. No, but it is this thing that I'd say it reconnects your relationship with the world and with nature and with yourself. And it completely, it's like pressing restart on your system. And I think, you know, that's what I would say about the Camino to people. You know, they're like, so what's it like every day? You know, how long do you walk for? Where do you start? How did you plan it? And Dad and I are gassed, you know, like, okay, Dad did plan it, but each day, you know, we woke up and we just walked, and we didn't, you know, bring snacks or any of the stuff. Like, we barely had bottles of water. You just get up each day and you walk and you figure it out along the way. And I think that's a great image to create for the Camino in general. You figure it out along the way and you just just get there and start walking, and the rest will fall into place.
What do you think was the greatest reward?
I think the greatest reward for me was what it did to me and Dad's relationship. I believe that whatever happens in my life in the future, you know, God forbid anything happened bad between Dad and I, you know, bad blood or we fell out, I think it would be impossible to have permanent damage there purely because of what the Camino did for our relationship. It gave us a bond that I'll never have with anyone or anything else in this world, because it was my first Camino. It was, you know, his introduction to the Camino and my introduction to the Camino was together. And we both loved it so much. It wasn't like Dad just loved it and I was tagging along. We both became instantly obsessed with it. And it became, you know, I don't know, like, essentially, Well, certainly when I was younger, you know, it was kind of like my Bible or my reference for anything. And I always said, like, if I ever get really confused or lost, I'll go on the Camino. And, you know, I remember Dad saying, you know, on the first time, he said, you know, when you meet a man that you think you want to spend the rest of your life with, you better make sure you can walk the Camino with him first. And it, yeah, I think the best thing it gave me was the connection with my father, but also with myself.
So that's such a great answer. Honestly, truly, I have tears in my eyes, and I'm not a crier. But okay, so that's the greatest reward. What was the greatest challenge, do you think?
Oh, that's a good question. I suppose there's physical challenges and then there's mental challenges. So I suppose the physical challenge for me, you know, I actually don't know if there was I got really bad blisters at one point. But for Dad, obviously, because he was older, you know, there were days where something happened one time where he had a bad ankle or something like that. But generally speaking, physically, there were very few challenges. Dad and I are quite fit. Again, we love hiking, so yeah, there was not going to be an issue there. I suppose if I'm going to answer the question for Dad, it would probably be death. He had a lot to get over with death because his mum had died and his dad had died and he was struggling with that. And that was on his mind. But for me, I know this sounds crazy, but I'm not sure I had any challenges. I was just in total bliss the whole time, you know. Yeah. I was young. I didn't have any worries about money or what I was going to do with my life. You know, my worries were so benign. You know, it was like, oh, what am I going to study in college? Or, oh, I'm single. You know, all this crap. So there was never really... Oh, actually, you know what, Dan? I'll tell you what my biggest worry was.
Go on.
When I was doing the Camino, I had just finished in secondary school. So I had just done I was about to go into college. And here in Ireland, when you finish up in school, you have a thing called a debutante ball. I suppose, I don't know what they call it in Australia, but in the States, it's like prom.
Oh, yeah.
And because it's at the end of the summer, Dan and I were walking this in the summer. And Dan, my greatest worry along the Camino is that I didn't have a fecking date for my debutante ball. And as I was getting closer to finishing the Camino, I was like, what am I going to do? Like, I don't have a bloody date for this fucking debutante ball. I'm going to go alone. I'm going to be wearing my stupid green dress and photos will be taken and I'm going to be standing there like a big plum on my own. And sure didn't I meet my debutante date along the Camino.
No.
I sure did.
That's fantastic. Oh, that is the best story ever. That is just so great. What would you say to somebody thinking of walking the Camino who's listening now? They don't know anything about it. They found this funny podcast, this Irish girl talking to this Australian guy. What would you say to them who are somebody thinking of walking the Camino?
I would say stop thinking and just do it because you won't regret it.
What is the Camino story?
The Camino story is, on the outside, it is a walk through Spain where you don't need a lot of money and you get pilgrim meals and cheap accommodation and you meet people and you hike. On the inside, the Camino is an opportunity for you to gain something that you won't gain in any other aspect of life. Whether it's your job, family, opportunity, or travel. The Camino is a completely different category of its own, and it will give you something incredible. And I don't know what that is, and you won't know what that is until you're walking the Camino.
Natasha, the book is a celebration of what I was talking about in the introduction to our interview, and that is a celebration of love. And there's no better place to commemorate or celebrate love than on the Camino de Santiago. Congratulations to you and your dad, Patrick, Natasha. And thank you for taking the time to talk to me and my listeners. Buen Camino.
Buen Camino.
My guest this week was the Irish pilgrim Natasha Murtagh. The book is called Buen Camino by Natasha and Peter Murtagh, M-U-R-T-A-G-H. Natasha and Peter Murtagh. You can find it everywhere online. It is magic. The Camino is magic. And the Camino family is the spell that makes it sing. No one knows who said, "Fathers, be your daughter's first love and she'll never settle for anything less." The author is anonymous, but there's a name for the phenomenon, family. Thanks for your company as always. I'm delighted to have the chance to share the Camino with you each week, and I'll be back again next week with a story about the salt of the earth. Until then, I'm Dan Mullins. Buen Camino.